Welcome to Leave Your Mark, where I explore the influences that have shaped the lives of our incredible guests. These are the stories of lives worth talking about. Follow me on Twitter at Built by Scott and Instagram at King O'Pain, or link up with me on my Facebook fan page at Scott G. Livingston. My goal is to create a community of people who take every opportunity to live high-performing lives. Before I get started on today's podcast, I want to take a moment to connect you with my sponsor, ReconditioningHQ.com. Reconditioning has gone completely virtual. We've taken both our Level 1 and Level 2 courses and loaded them onto an online platform so that you can digest the power of this amazing operating system from the comfort of your home. We combine this recorded video experience with live Zoom labs to bring all the principles and practices of reconditioning to life through applied case study. In turn, you walk away with how to best use this language of common practice to bring the worlds of therapy and performance together in one powerful approach that creates lasting change in your client's performance. This fall, ReconditioningHQ.com is launching a complete experience package that brings all of the video teachings together with a powerful mentorship program and a weekly community touchpoint so you can grow as the reconditioning revolution grows. We are truly excited about the possibilities. We believe that success in any venture begins with the right mindset. We know that the statistics for burnout in human performance are significant and that many of our colleagues face questions every day about personal fulfillment and living their best life. This is why we've started a landmark program for human performance professionals called Empower You. This program is all about crafting your best life, living purposefully, and enjoying the fruits of your impassioned labor. For more information about reconditioning courses or our amazing Empower You program, head over to reconditioninghq.com and use the coupon code LYM50 for $50 Canadian off the program of your choice. Understatement alert, for sports performance coaches and proactive healthcare professionals, the last 6 months have been very challenging. We are now seeing the permanent changes in our profession. How our services are delivered are affected, and we must adapt. Providing safe and effective health and fitness coaching has never been more needed, yet never been more uncertain. Matrix Fitness Canada wants to help you in your journey. Matrix Fitness is a premier brand of fitness equipment designed for organizations, professionals, and exercisers alike. If you are refreshing your facility, they can help. If you are in need of setting up clients with their home gym space, they can help. The Matrix Fitness Canada Ambassador Program is designed to help you expand the reach of your services. This program supports your expertise in supporting home gym design so your clients can have what they need to continue to subscribe to your services. The best part, you can insert yourself into the economic equation as a Matrix Fitness Canada Ambassador. For more information on requirements to qualify and the details around their services, please connect with Nikki.Turner at jhtcanada.com. Welcome to our newest Leave Your Mark sponsor, Rep Performance. Rep Performance is a web application founded by NHLers Nick Foligno and his strength and conditioning coach, Callan McGibbon. Understanding the importance of the developmental stages and their impact on long-term athlete development, they launched an online performance for coaches, trainers, or teachers that would instill a foundation of fitness, share their story, and help them ensure no athlete slips through the cracks and they are equipped to succeed in sport and life. Visit them at repperformanceapp.com. Hello and welcome to Leave Your Mark. I'm your host, Scott Livingston, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Alexander Desiri. Alex is a business and life coach. Before getting into coaching, he was a professional b-boy and breakdancer. He was part of Team Schmetta, one of the top crews in the world between 2009 and 2013. Alex traveled the world and battled on stages surrounded by more than 10,000 people. He organized the b-boy world championship called Raw Circles in Antwerp, Belgium, which at its peak had 1 million yearly YouTube views, 2,000 people in attendance, and 50 countries participating. In the middle of the last decade, Alex's career moved to London, where he took on a role with the media company London Real as their head of product. During this time, he created 4 major online courses and led most of the marketing efforts around these programs in terms of launch strategy, copywriting, sales pages, and social media strategy, resulting in millions of pounds in revenue. Now he coaches entrepreneurs in marketing strategy, content creation, product product creation and launch strategy. He combines this with awareness, helping the entrepreneur understand what they really want so they don't burn out, feel lost, or get overwhelmed. I met Alex a few months ago, and I was taken by his true desire to serve and his mission to help business people thrive in both business and life. I'm excited to speak with him today. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you so much, Scott. Very happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to actually talk to you about a whole series of different subjects, which I think my listenership are going to find really interesting and learn a lot about. But I always start my, this is a life journey podcast, so I start my podcast out sort of investigating where life started. So you were born in Belgium and you grew up in Belgium?
In Antwerp, Belgium.
So that's your hometown where you live today?
Correct.
Very cool. Are your parents still there and stuff? Are family still there?
They are still here. Yes. Okay. Both my mom and dad are here. My dad is from Tunisia, so he's back and forth between Tunisia and Belgium. But yes, they're still here.
Oh, so your father's from Tunisia. Okay. Where's your mom from? From Belgium?
She's from Belgium. She's okay. From Belgium.
Cool. And so was growing up in Belgium, like I'm curious, so you mentioned when we first met, you speak a lot of languages. Is that a standard practice growing up in school that you learn multiple languages in school, or is that something you have taken an affinity for yourself?
It's a standard here in Belgium. So you have to learn, by law, it should be three languages, mm-hmm. because you have the north, which is the Flemish part, where they speak Dutch. Where I'm from, where Antwerp is, and then the south, which is Wallonia, which is French. And after World War II, when the Allies won, Germany, as a way of saying sorry, gave a piece of their land to Belgium. And now we had to also learn German because they joined. And then you have English, which is the international language in Brussels, so everybody knows a little bit of English. So yeah, it's kind of standard practice to be learning all these languages, although not everybody is that fluent, but you do learn it in school, and you do have a certain level here in Belgium of understanding different languages.
What's the language you're most comfortable in?
Dutch.
Dutch. I'm wondering, like, I was interested in this question, especially I speak two languages as well, but obviously French, not as fluently as English, but what language do you think in? Do you think in the immediate language of the conversation, or do you think in Dutch when you're thinking about things?
Well, that's great. So I actually think about that piece a lot because since I moved to London, and I speak English all the time, I think in English, mm-hmm. especially when I think about business or writing content, I think in English. But then I catch myself thinking in English, and then I think, well, I'm Dutch, so shouldn't I be thinking in Dutch? So I switch between both of them, and I lose words between both of them. Like when I speak to a Dutch friend, I'm trying to explain something in Dutch, and I can't come up with a word, I say it in English, and I'm like, it says, oh, it means this. Oh, yeah, yeah, right. And then the other way around in English. So, yeah, I'm like switching between both modes all the time.
Wow. That's wild. What did you grow up wanting to be, like wishing to be, looking up at the stars and dreaming to be?
I had a couple of phases, but I think the first real thing that I can remember is I wanted to be an archaeologist.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I don't know why. I liked Indiana Jones and the Adventure, I think. Alexander the Great, after my name. So I kind of had a phase of being an archaeologist, of wanting that. And then that actually died out pretty young. But I think something that has always kind of been in the back of my mind is acting. Mm. So I always wanted to be an actor. And I thought everybody wanted to be a famous actor, but apparently it's not. So actually, I had a long dream of wanting to be an actor.
So how do you get into breakdancing?
How did I get into breakdancing? Around my 14 years old, I think I was doing a lot of stuff. I was just trying all kinds of stuff that just a test. And I remember watching a video clip of somebody doing a windmill, which for people who don't know what that is you're kind of spinning your legs around and you're also spinning on your back a little bit in this kind of 360 motion. And I remember just watching these extreme moves happening, and I thought, I want to do this. How can I do this? Where do I need to learn this? How do I do this? So for 1 year, I searched for a breakdancer. I couldn't find it. It took me 1 year. And I remember following a workshop with my man Lefty. That was his b-boy name. And from the first day I did that workshop, I asked him, where do you guys train? I never stopped since. I trained 2, 3, 4 days a week. And I've never really stopped training ever since that workshop.
So you still do it now?
I still do it now as a way of expressing myself. So for a long time, it has been a way of wanting to compete and achieve. And my identity was wrapped up in the recognition. But right now, I came back to the, or at least I'm attempting to come back to the fun aspect. As it is now, as we're doing this interview, it's lockdown. And I find myself, whether I want to or not, putting on music and dancing randomly when I haven't danced for a long time, to Michael Jackson, to whatever, you know. Like, my girlfriend was in the bed yesterday, I think, and I put on this Michael Jackson song, You Rock My World. You rock my world, you know you did. And for the full 5 minutes, I did a performance for her. I jumped on the bed in front of her. She was mesmerized. So I think dancing is just in my blood. I need to express myself.
That's awesome. So what did you fall in love with in it? The ability to express yourself, the adulation, the physicality of it? What was it that you fell in love with?
Yeah, a lot of things. I loved the raw music. I loved the fact that you have to be original. So if you're a b-boy or breakdancer, your own style, your own moves is very important, to have your own moves, or else people tell you you're quote-unquote whack. Or you're a biter because you copy people. What I also really loved was, I love the realness of the dance, in the sense that you can't fake being a good dancer. The way you communicate in dancing is, you go to an event, you create a circle either before or after the competition, and you know, you dance. One guy comes in, he dances, then the other one guy comes in, he responds, he dances. You know, that's what we call a cipher or a circle. And you can instantly see whether somebody has skills or not. If you can't dance, you can't fake being a dancer, which, unfortunately, for instance, in the modern world, when we do business or marketing or other types of things, it's very easy to create a facade. Oh, I'm going to help you do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. But with dancing, you can talk a big game. But in the words of a friend of mine, Munir, who is like the world championship or Red Bull BC One, he would say, "Montre, show me, as in, show me what you got.
Yeah.
If you can't show it, get out of here. You lose your respect." And I think I just love that realness, as in, nobody's going to judge me for where I come from or how I look like or what I have. They're going to judge me based on the work and effort I've put in. And I think, from where I came from, because I come from Belgium, which is a rich country. So anybody who grows up in Belgium has nothing to complain about. But I think in the social status kind of hierarchy, I was at the bottom. I lived in a quote unquote project, or whatever you want to call it, in a poor home. And I had, you could say, a tough upbringing, those kind of things. So I think dancing was for me, it was an underground culture where I could really express myself and where I would either get recognition or not based on my actions and work and nothing else. And I think that was something that I saw that I could really become somebody in, because of all the pain I had to endure that was put onto me from my environment, all the baggage and conditioning and luggage I had to carry. I think dancing was a real outlet for me to just be real with myself and my environment.
Just out of curiosity, because a lot of the listenership that listens to my podcast is in the human performance industry, and you know, the physicality of breakdancing is truly impressive. There's a lot of stuff that you guys do that's just really off the hook. And you know, there's always this kind of energy in the human performance world that you gotta go lift weights and to be able to perform. And I'm just curious, what percentage of breakdancers actually train do auxiliary training to support what it is they do, and what percentage are just dance, and that's what creates the repetitiveness of it, creates the strength that they tap into to do the things that they do.
Okay. And I'm guessing conscious training, as in I'm going to train.
Yeah, going to go to the gym, lift weights, do things that you're doing versus right. just doing what you do.
So when I started, which was when I was 15 years old, which is about 16, 17 years ago now. If we would say from 0 to 100%, I would say 0% of people were doing auxiliary training. It was just we would always make a joke. We would go to a competition, almost break ourselves literally, then win the prize money, 100 euros each, and then we would go use that to go to the chiropractor and fix ourselves, you know? That's how we would think about it. So nobody was really doing that. Because it was very much an underground culture, and they were mostly street guys, outcasts, guys that came from a poor upbringing. Although everybody thought it was cool, usually you weren't in breaking if everything was going great in your life for some reason. I mean, people who were really attracted to it usually have something to prove. So it was usually street guys with no education. I would say today it is accelerating. I think if you want to compete in the top 1%, you will rarely find somebody who is not doing auxiliary training, although it's very new and kind of untapped. I think most of us are looking at other disciplines to learn and see what they're doing. So for instance, me, I remember when, even now, where I would search would be MMA, for instance, because you have a lot of high-level people there. And you could say fighting is a little bit like dancing, as in you need a great foundation with your body, and then you need to be very creative with all kinds of movements with your body. So we go look there. But I don't think there's a lot of knowledge and proven research around how auxiliary training can improve your dancing, which is a big gap and a great opportunity for the future.
Mm-hmm. Really cool. So I'm interested how you go from being a break dancer to getting interested in the business side of break dancing. So, you know, I'm sure there's guys who just compete and just do it, but you decided you would organize competitions and get involved in sort of that business side of things. Why aspire to that, and what attracts you to that?
Yeah. So I understand that you mean Raw Circles, the event.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
So the funny thing that you say that is only when I left Raw Circles, or when I tried to make money from it, that I saw it as a business. In the beginning, I didn't see it as, oh, I am conducting business. All I wanted to do was get people together and serve my community. I also think because I was not very talented at dancing, and I was a little bit heavy, like I was a little bit fatter, and as you said, no auxiliary training, just do whatever you can to get the recognition. I think that was also a way for me to be recognized in my crew, as in maybe I'm not the one who's going to perform the hardest on stage, but I'm going to create this event where I'm going to give my crew members a stage for them to become better in the world. Because I would invite, I mean, in the beginning, it wasn't the world. It was just first it's Belgium, then it's Europe, then it became the world. But for me, I think it was also, first of all, compensating the fact that I wasn't good enough in dancing myself. And then also because I believe I'm somebody who loves to bring people together. And as I was doing that, and I love getting 2,000 people into a room and giving them an amazing experience and having everybody scream and get the best dancers and give you an experience that you will remember for life. Because that was the tagline of Raw Circles. Raw Circles, rock to be remembered. Mm-hmm. Having an experience that you remember that event, I will never forget that. And still today, people come to me and they say, when are you going to do another Raw Circles? You know, that was kind of the thing that I wanted to create. So in the beginning, it was only when I saw that I was leaving home and I had to start making money. That's when the whole money aspect got involved into it. But that's when it kind of became difficult because the quote unquote dancing industry didn't have a lot of money. So that's where I hit the wall. Mm. And that's what got me to transition into something new, because I had to start making money.
Right. You're on releasing a presentation that you have created that you shared with me that's about 30 minutes long in a few days from now. And it kind of walks in a very sort of thoughtful manner through maybe your life experiences and sort of where you are headed now from a mission perspective. So I'm kind of curious to unpack that a little bit from this point onwards, which you talk a lot at the beginning about, you know, growing up and your dad being, obviously dad's from Tunisia. So, you know, you talk about your dad being really hard on you and maybe you not having the kind of feedback that you needed or wanted or sought, and then being a little bit chubby, as you said, and stuff. So what is growing up for you, and how does that instigate who you become in the early phases of your life? And we can sort of walk through that, how that sort of transitions through London Real and the other experiences that you have. But
So the interesting thing is that what I'm about to say now is I only realized this the last year. Mm. But what I realized was that I grew up in an environment with two parents that almost didn't, they never said, I love you, or they never openly showed love. My mom was always there and she always took care of me, but she was, as she told me, emotionally unavailable. And my father was there, but he wasn't really there. You could see him on the couch, but he was just watching television and being depressed. Mm. And basically, from where he came from, he migrated from Tunisia to Belgium. And he came from a hard upbringing where his dad didn't give him love. So when he had me as a son, his heart was still fragmented. So it didn't have a heart to give me. Mm. And I remember watching my father sit on the couch and my mother would be trying to talk to my father and he would just be looking at the television, not listening, while my mother was sad and trying to communicate something. And I remember watching my father and thinking, I will never become like that. Hmm. I will never become a person who says, well, you know, this is the cards life has dealt me. I can't do anything about it. I'm depressed. I don't have any work. I can't take care of my kids and my wife. And well, that's just the way it is. So I'm just going to sit in this couch and I'm just going to watch television. Too bad. That really impacted me. And I think that is what made me extremely driven, because I was afraid to become like my father. So I did everything I could to become somebody in dancing, to become somebody when I went to London, to become somebody when I do this or I do that. A lot of that was geared towards trying to achieve and trying to become somebody. So I think that was a very important part of my upbringing.
Do you think, like, as you kind of explore this idea of drive and being driven by fear versus, as you talk about in your presentation, being pulled and sort of drawn towards something by love and, you know, in a sense, better emotional context. What, do you think this is a common thematic for a lot of people, that were, you know, driven by the wrong factors in some sense and need to discover that in our sort of life journey? Is that sort of why you're exploring this mission at this point? Our sponsor, Rep Performance, is a web application launched by co-founders Nick Foligno and Callan McGibbon. Their platform is designed for teachers and youth sport coaches with pre-designed testing templates and AI-driven workouts geared to individual needs. They aim to provide every coach the ability to develop fitness for life in the athletes of tomorrow, share their story, and help them ensure no athlete slips through the cracks and they are equipped to succeed in sport and life. Visit them at Rep prepperformanceapp.com today. Our sponsor, Matrix Fitness, produces training tools that focus on improving the training experience for athletes and coaches alike. With equipment that focuses on building speed, power, and explosive performance in the most efficient manner, Matrix has partnered with some of the top sporting organizations worldwide. COVID has forced us all to rethink how we are offering our services. With that in mind, Matrix Fitness Canada has created an ambassador program designed to help you expand the reach of your services. This program supports your expertise in supporting home gym design so your clients can have what they need to continue to subscribe to your services. The best part? You can insert yourself into the economic equation as a Matrix Fitness Canada ambassador. For more information on requirements to qualify and the details around their services, please connect with Nikki.Turner at jhtcanada.com.
Yes. So this is an important question, and I think about this a lot. So what I've recently been thinking about is, have you ever met anybody who you know had a great upbringing and great parents, and he was loved, and he became a super successful achiever? Usually not. Usually they're just relaxed people. They have a great friends. They have a great family. Yeah, they are successful, but not, they're not super successful. And then I think, and then, you know, I'm an achiever, you're an achiever, and I'm assuming everybody, most people who are listening here are achievers. We look at those people like they're crazy, you know, like you're not doing anything with your life. But why would you not want to be like that? Why would you not want to be happy and content and have a great life and great friends? And why do you have to go out and achieve everything and get to the next level? Why do you have to do that? Mm-hmm. So what I explore is, while we tell ourselves, well, it's to get more juice out of life, it's to get opportunities, it's to make life interesting, it's to be more, to achieve more, to do more. And to a certain extent, that's definitely true. But I think for a lot of us, we push too hard to a level where we lie to ourselves, and we think we are driven, like me as myself, I'm driven. But what I realized is, people who are extremely driven, it's usually they are being driven by something that they're not aware of. Hmm. Why else? In order to achieve something monumentous, you have to push yourself beyond a limit of pain. And why would you want to do that? If you consciously know, wait, this is painful, this is hard, why would you want to push yourself to extreme levels of pain? I believe it's usually something subconscious. I believe that you can be a great achiever, achieve incredible feats, and do things that people admire you for, but I think only a few are able to do it in a way that's balanced, where they're not feeling extremely stressed and burnout. I think that's the art. And I think that is way more rare than the people who achieve and who are in pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about your experience that kind of moved you closer towards sort of this understanding. You are doing breakdancing, and then you can elaborate on the actual conversion point, but you decide to go to London and take a job at London Real. And as I recall, you can tell the story, I think it was the London Real's owner, Brian Rose, wanted to breakdance, and so you convinced him you could teach him breakdance, and so he hired you, and you came to London and somehow started working with him. So maybe elaborate on the story and then explore where you kind of went overboard with your drive and learned some things about yourself.
Yeah, so my dancing career has kind of come to, I would say, I said, okay, I want to do something else, so I got to make money. And I started this social media business, this social media agency, based on everything I've learned from doing my event Raw Circles. And it's kind of going up and down, but it's not really bringing in money. I'm really working very hard. It's not very fulfilling. And I'm following a couple of podcasts, a couple of channels. One of them is London Real. London Real is, for those who don't know, it's one of the biggest interview podcasts in the world. You can Google it. You can look it up. More than 100 million audio downloads, more than 2 million subscribers. And I saw that the interviewer, Brian Rose, after doing an interview with Ido Portal, the movement guy who trained or had an impact on Conor McGregor, his training, the MMA fighter, I saw that he started breakdancing. Now, I saw that he didn't really have a good teacher. You can see that it was kind of weird movements that he was doing. So I thought, oh, I'm just going to reach out. And what I did is I sent him an email and I said, hey, I'm such and such, such and such. I'm this guy. I wrote this super long email explaining who I was. And I basically said, I'll come to London, from Belgium to London. I'll pay my own ticket and I'll teach you for free. And the second I send it, I think to myself, God, you're so stupid. Such a long email. Nobody's going to read that. Nobody's going to answer that. And the next day, I get an email back, just one sentence, Sunday morning. Cheers, mate. When do we start? So I'm like, holy shit. You know, it worked. So I book my ticket. I come to London. I prepare this workshop. I teach him how to dance. And afterwards, we talk, and we have a good connection. There's a great connection going on. And he paid back my ticket. He says, yo, you got guts coming here by yourself. It's nice. I respect it. And I became his personal coach. So every 2 to 3 weeks, I would come to London, from Belgium to London, and I would teach him how to dance. By this point, London Real is only about 5 people. It's not very big. But they already have a big reach. There's kind of a little bit of money coming in. And one job opening opens up. Social media ninja. Now, I've been running a social media agency for 2 years. And I'm thinking to myself, what are the possibilities that I'm teaching a 45-year-old man breakdancing and this one job opens up that I've been training myself in the last two years? They might say, you know the saying, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. That was kind of the thing that was going on in my head. So I said, this is serendipity. This is an opportunity. You need to go for this. So next time I come over, I say, hey, Brian, I want that job. And he kind of laughs at me. He's like, ha, 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 ha. What are you going to do? Social media? You're my breakdance coach. What are you going to do? I have more than 100 applications going on. How are you going to come? What are you going to do? So I said, oh, okay. I said, give me 1 week. I'll come back. So I go back home, and for 1 week, I'm preparing a presentation. And I come back from everything that I've learned from my social media agency. I analyze London Real, and I come back. I teach him. We sit down on the table. We sit at the table. And I go into my briefcase, and I pull out the 7-page offer, and I smack it on the table. I said, this is what I'm going to do for you. 1, 2, 3, 4, this. You're not good enough over here. You're doing this, but you can do better here. Maybe we should work on this. Have you considered this? Maybe you should do this, blah, 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 blah. And he's like looking at me with his eyes, and he's like, okay, you're hired. So within a week, I move from Belgium to London in 1 week time. I give up everything. I say, this is an opportunity. I got to go for this. And it was a difficult decision for me because I always want to be my own boss. I always want to be on my own. And I came from an environment where I was on a stage, where I had certain recognition, where I was the man in my community, where I knew a lot of dancers. And now I basically chose to go work for somebody behind the scenes, which was a weird kind of decision for me. But something told me this is serendipity. And it's like the universe is talking to you. That's what I believe. You can slice it any way you want, but that's what I believe. So I went to London, and I came in contact with all this big names, guys that I always looked up to that I never knew that I would ever meet. You know, Run DMC, Fatboy Slim, Ido Portal, Jordan Peterson, a guy I liked was Eben Pagan. Who else was there? Chris Eubank. All these big names. Grant Cardone, whatever. All these big names from all kinds of industries came there. And I was on a team that was determined and driven. We were a startup, but we were very versatile. And everybody who was there believed in the mission that we were doing something to make the world a better place, to create these conversations that people were really getting impacted by. So I told myself, wow, I got a real opportunity here to figure out what I'm good at, what I'm great at, and I can maximize my skills here because I'm reading an environment that's so unique. So what I did is I gave myself up to the company and I worked myself silly. 12-hour days for 2 years on end, maybe longer. And I had a very simple life. Wake up, go to work, drink caffeine, work my face off, come back home, have 1 hour of relaxation, go to sleep, next day, same thing again. And as we were talking about the drive thing, I believe that was extremely driven. And there was this voice inside my head that was just going like, keep going, keep going, keep going. And another voice was like, I don't know, maybe I'm pushing myself too hard. But I thought like, no, just push because this is unique and you got to go. And basically, I worked myself into burnout and I pushed myself to points where I became very fearful. I woke up every day with crunchy eyes, opening my eyes. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do it. It's just pushing myself. And basically, it wasn't something that was pulling me. It was something I was pushing myself constantly, pushing, pushing. Get that cup of coffee, push, push, push. Going through the motions, mm-hmm. like an empty hollow shell, moving forward, work, 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 work.
Before you go further on that and elaborate, I just want to circle back for a second. So if you go back to the two stories you talked about with, you know, when you reached out to him about breakdancing and then the social media, where does the confidence come from inside you that you can actually make that happen? And then number two, what do you think is burning inside of you at that moment that is pushing you to take those chances, in essence, to show him that you could do what you could do? What was going on in your brain? Why did you have to do that? And where did you get the, as some people would describe, the balls to think you could do it?
Good question, because I want to answer this in a way where I hope it gives value to the listener. Because at the moment, I know I failed so hard. I remember doing my social media agency, and after coming from such a big win as a dancer and being at the peak of my lifestyle, I said, oh, I'm just going to do something else. And I was incredibly confident from what I did before. And I said, oh, I'm going to make this work. I'm going to make this work. And I remember just doing that for 18 months, and it was just not working. I remember going to the river at Antwerp, and I was by myself in the studio for more than 1 year trying to get this off the ground, super lonely and just crying and just thinking to myself, I have really failed. This is my first real failure in life. I just can't make this happen. And I thought I was so great. I got to do something. I got to make something happen. That's what was basically going on in my mind. Now, what got me the balls to do it? I mean, that's a great question, because I try to think of what I think my mindset. This is kind of my mindset that I see. I think this question was asked to me before, and I think the way I see it is most people look at the lens of if I do this, what will be the, maybe I will have rejection and I will suffer all these losses and I will look bad, all these type of things. And I feel these things too, but I have another frame that is working harder than that, which is if I don't do this and I look back on it, I don't want to regret this. Mm. I don't want to regret looking at, oh, you had an opportunity, you didn't do anything. I think the best analogy is you go into a bar, you see a girl that you like, and you think to yourself, I want to go talk to her, but you think, ah, no, she's not going to like me. She's not going to like me. I'm not going to talk to her. It's better to be safe. To me, it would be the opposite. If I would be in a bar and I would see a girl and I would not go talk to her and I would go out, I would say, you idiot, you pussy, you let that go. What? Yeah. You're regretting it right now, right? Yeah. That's how I would look at it. So the next time I feel like I do not want to regret that. So that's kind of my frame of mind.
I love the response. So here's what's interesting to me is that, is there a difference between that? Like now that you've gone through, and we're going to circle back on the change that you've gone through and stuff, do you still have that level of instigative fire in you, but from a different perspective? In other words, that's a strength. That's a true strength to be able to go and sort of say, no, I'm gonna go for that, and I'm gonna punch myself in the face if I didn't go for it. But there, in that drive perspective that you talk about, that, you know, is that still an attribute that you can touch tangibly in who you are today, but still have made some of the conversion and growth that you've gone through and realized the reason for it, et cetera. Do you understand where I'm coming from? Like, definitely. Yeah.
Definitely. Yes.
Okay.
The difference is, as I'll go through my story a little bit later and come to how I came to the solution or the insights, as we want to call it. The difference now is, first of all, before I would say yes to every opportunity. So if I see anything that I think is an opportunity, reaching out to London Real, you know, because London Real is the quote unquote success story of my life. But I did a lot of dumb stuff before. Yeah? So I tried a speed dating kind of business. I had a supplement, my own supplement for dancers. I started a how to study faster audiobook kind of thing. I did a lot of weird stuff. And every time I would see an opportunity, I would just say, yes, do it. Don't regret it. And that's a strength. But it can also limit you, because obviously if you're spreading yourself thin around all the things, you don't know what the right opportunity is to put your time in, because there are so many opportunities in the world. You can do so many things now. I mean, I'm sitting here today. I can create content. I can write a book. I can start a business. I can go on TikTok. I can go on LinkedIn. I can go on Facebook. I can do all kinds. I can be a coach. I can do so many things. But what's the right thing? I think I make the distinction there. So first of all, I make a better distinction between what should I be aiming for? And then secondly, and I think this is an important one too, is I believe I take more risk. I believe I take more risk, and I'm going to explain to you why. I'm going to tell you my story now, because I think you want me to go further on where the story is going to at London Real. Mm-hmm. And then once I tell the story, I'm going to show you and say, like, look, this is where I took more risk, which I wouldn't do before.
Yep.
When I was at London Real, I basically worked myself silly to a point where I started getting suicidal thoughts. That was the low point of my life. I remember working at London Real. I was there for 2 years or 2.5 years. And I started profiling myself as a speaker. I said, like, oh, it's time for me. I'm creating success here at London Real. I mean, I'd like to believe I was a key team member in the growth of London Real. And I started building my ego up in such a way that I said, I'm going to be the speaker. I got all these crazy guys at London Real. Well, I can do this. I come in contact with them every single day. I'll do it myself. So I start profiling myself as a speaker. And I remember going to a conference and giving a speech on how to be successful in business. And afterwards, somebody walking up to me and asking me a question. And while that's happening, my mind wanders off and I see an image suddenly of me hanging from my neck. A suicidal thought. From a rope. And I was shocked at that point, because I would think, why would I think this? Probably could tell by the first part of this interview that I'm a quite upbeat, happy kind of guy. Yeah, let's get these things happening. I would never think that something like that would happen to me. I thought that happened to these sensitive, self-loathing artists, but it would never happen to me. But it did happen to me. And I quit. You know, I didn't know what to do at the time, so I quit my job. And we can go in a second. We can go into the story maybe on how I resolved that. But why I mentioned this is after I had this happen and I did a lot of work on getting out of there, and I became aware of this drive and I became aware of how to deal with this, and I saw myself crawling out of that rock bottom pit and really getting to a new level, a better level, a more aware version of myself, then I decided, oh, let me create a speech around this. Let me take my deepest pain, learn from it, and give a message about the speech, and then present it to people, because I believe that's the most meaningful thing that I could do with my life. That's my contribution. 3 years ago, that version of Alexander would have never done that, because that would seem too risky, I believe, because I would go so deep into something that most people wouldn't even dare touching to talk about something like that. But I think because I did this work, I can now use this strength that you're talking about, going out there and making stuff happen. I think I'm using it with the right opportunities. So I'm not just doing, when I left London Real and then I built my coaching business and I was at a comfortable level, I said, all right, what am I going to do now with my time? I got a lot of things that I can do. Start a business, because I understand business now a little bit. I can do a podcast. I can do this. I did all these things. But because I'm not taking on 20 opportunities at the same time, I have more space. I have more energy. So I can take the thing that's the most uncomfortable, but the thing that I believe will yield the most important results. Mm-hmm. Maybe if I do a dumbed down how-to YouTube channel on how to become successful, I will attract a lot more people listening to it, because that's what people want to hear. But if I create a speech on how I had suicidal thoughts and how I got out of it, and I create this 30-minute piece, that's not really mass appeal. But who cares? If I can get into somebody's brain, just one person, I know this sounds corny, but I really believe this. If I can create something and I can help one person who has suicidal thoughts, who doesn't know how to get out of it, who's a high achiever, who has so much potential, and I can give them a seed to change it, I rocked to be remembered. I did my thing. I did something that I see as valuable. So I make my decisions around my opportunities differently, and I try to use my strength on where I believe it matters and where it will fulfill me the most and give me the most results that are most aligned with my values.
Awesome. I'm going to use that time to pivot to your purpose. So I have this book called The Day You Were Born that was written by a woman named Linda Joyce that I always read to people when I have them as guests. It's a combination of astrology and numerology. You were born May 25th, correct?
Correct.
So you are a Gemini 7. So your purpose is to bring your dream into the moment and recognize your power to create and transform your life and those of others. Spirituality is a kind of virgin wisdom, a knowing that comes prior to experience. Marilyn Ferguson. Gemini 5s are psychic. Mercury, Neptune persons are high on imagination, but they pay a price. The names of things and places elude them like invisible ink. When thoughts dissolve, the Gemini 7 has been transported either to the angels or to the snake pit. No middle ground here. As with all Neptune combinations, spirit and faith are paramount. This combination moves quickly. In a blink of an eye, their ideas have changed and so have their circumstances and awareness. Exterior security does not exist. That's why their instincts are so important. Gemini 7s must choose between dreaming about life or living it. Not an easy task for this combination. The stars seem to pull them into their embrace and hold them high above the pettiness of life. However, from that height, they have perspective, not experience. And experience is what being a Gemini is all about. The danger of pursuing dreams is that the dream becomes reality, and then Gemini 7s are left with the need to create something new to pine for. If they have taken on the perfectionist side of this combination, they might find that they want it all or nothing. Some succeed, but most are left with nothing. Life is a mixed bag, so use your Gemini daring and try a bit of everything. It can only make you a better person. Interesting. I can hear a lot of you in that for sure. So you're burnt out, you're having suicidal thoughts, you know, and I think what's important for the listener too is that I know, knowing part of the reason why I have this podcast is to instigate, you know, contemplation and thought and provoke people to, you know, consider, because in the world of human performance, the irony is that we're always trying to help people perform, but a lot of times we're burning ourselves out and working like maniacs as well. And there's always this question about drive and purpose and why you're doing it, and, you know, and really coming to some connection with that. So you're in the middle of this burnout space. What sort of slaps you in the face? What change of direction do you take, and why do you get inspired by helping others at that point? Like, what's the transition point, and how does it become created in you?
The fact that I want to help people through this presentation, or?
Yeah, through your presentation, through the work that you do. Obviously, there's been a change in the spirit of who you are from when you worked at London Real, where you, there was obviously a sense that you were doing this maybe for the wrong reasons, or in your mind now, being driven by the wrong things. And now you've discovered, you know, being pulled in essence by love and, you know, serving others and things like that. You know, that's not a transition that happens in 5 seconds. So how does that transition help happen for you? And what do you discover about yourself in the process?
Yeah. I find something so insightful and funny. The fact that the most important events or changes in my life were never things I thought about in the first place. They always happened to me. Mm. I never planned them. When I came to London, and people ask me, why did you come to London? I would always say, I didn't choose London. London chose me. As you can hear, I have an American accent. You know, what am I doing in London? You know, so a lot of people thought I would go to America, for instance. And after I left London Real, something happened to me also randomly that had such an impact on me. Well, I don't think it's random, but it happened to me without me planning it. Mm. I didn't know what to do next after I left. And for a year, I was just, I mean, I traveled a little bit. I had some money saved. I was trying to build my coaching business. I was resting. I was trying to get out this burnout, but I was kind of in the limbo for a long time. So for maybe about a year. And I gave a speech somewhere on marketing. Knockout Marketing is a concept I have. And a man approached me afterwards, and he told me, hi, my name is John Richards. I'm doing a retreat in my hometown. Will you please come and check it out? Please come. And I was like, guy looked kind of suspicious. You know, it's kind of weird. Like, all right. Kind of looked like an English hooligan mixed with being a Greek philosopher. But I said, yeah, sure, whatever. I'll come there. And I came, and it was a big surprise. This guy, he had a way of telling stories and asking questions that made me realize that my drive basically came from my father, because my biggest fear of my father was that he always wanted to be an important person in this life. And I basically realized that I took that on, that my biggest fear in life that was that I was not going to be an important person in this life. And I took that over from my father. It wasn't even my biggest fear, it was my father's fear. And I told myself, I want to get rid of this. I want to be free. I don't want to live with the baggage of the struggles of my environment and people around me. I want to be free and be able to understand what are my values, what can I create. And I remember John doing his thing, and at a certain point, I was just completely breaking down and crying in front of 700 people as hard as I ever could. I couldn't even, he was asking me what's going on, and I couldn't even speak. I was so choked. And I remember he gave me a 5-minute speech that was so impactful. And he told me afterwards, I only told this to you. Like, I never said this to anybody anywhere, but I felt that I was guided in telling this. And he told me basically, when we are driven, we believe that it's a good thing. But if you look at the word drive, it's associated with an emotion, usually, to be driven by fear. Now, we believe, or I believed, that I was driven, but I was actually being driven by the need to impress my father, because he wanted to be important, and now I was going to be important for him. And he told me, when you can get rid of that, and you can get to a place where you have space and you have room, and you say, I don't want the success anymore, fuck it, I'm just going to be who I want to be, that's when you will have room, and you will feel that you will become drawn. And instead of being driven by fear, you will become drawn by love. And you will always be driven. You will always be a driven man, because the wound that got inflicted on us as high achievers, it will not go away. It's there. But instead of this drive controlling you, you will be able to use it and aim it onto something you love and create a life that pulls you rather than something you're trying to push. In order to get there, I had to slay my father in my mind. And I went on a 10-month process of doing inner work and truly looking at my father the way that he was, because I suppressed the fact that I wasn't loved. I thought I had a great childhood, but I started realizing, wait a second, when I started looking at my father, because he told me, you need to look at your father because that's where the root is. And when I started examining it, I realized I did not have one loving memory of my father, not one. He didn't teach me how to shave. He never brought me to school. He never said great dancing. He never, nothing, zero. He was there, but he was never there. And it was these types of things that I realized that I had a lot of suppressed pain I had to deal with. And once I got through that pain, I saw the benefits of it. I saw how I became more creative, how I became more free, how I started loving my girlfriend more, how I became a man, how I wasn't into hero worship anymore, how all the guys I looked up to, you know, whatever, you do you, I'll do me. Because back before thousands of years ago, when you were in a tribe, when the boy becomes a man through a ritual where the whole community and the father makes the boy into a man, usually through a ritual of pain. And he said, and the father says, look, boy, you're my son. I will always love you, but it's done. You're not a boy anymore. You're a man, and you need to stop looking up to me and others, because now you're the man. You have to take care. You have to contribute. And we don't have that in our society anymore. We just get sent off. And what I believe is, because we've never had this ritual of being from a boy into a man, we're constantly chasing that approval of our father or a mother, or at least for me. And indirectly, that's why we're looking up to all these personal brands, because we're thinking, oh, I want to be like them, because we've never taken care of that part of us that realizes, wait a second, I'm not a boy anymore, I'm a man. What they do is great, but they're not my hero. They're my ally. They are going to help me become a man the way that I want to be. It's not that I'm going to try to be like them so I can please them indirectly. So having these insights and understanding this, and I felt so amazingly blessed that I had somebody like John Richards come into my life and show me all these things that I've never heard of. Don't forget, I mean, I worked at London Real. I heard the biggest names from all industries come and talk about all kinds of stuff. And I've never heard a guy like John Richards, what he talks about, this guy who's just underground. Not a lot of people know him. He's always by himself. And he's talking about these things that are just impacting me more than anything I've ever heard at London Real. And I thought, wow, I am blessed. How many people get the chance to meet somebody like that and to have a mentor help them through the struggle and become a man? Or even, you know, it's the same for a woman. You don't have to be a man necessarily. You can also be from the girl that becomes a woman. It's the same. How many people get this opportunity? Not a lot. And I have a voice. I know I can speak. I've given speeches. So I thought to myself, if there's the thing that I believe that is going to be the most impactful thing that I can do on this planet, is to bring this message forward, because not everybody has a John Richards. And John Richards, he's chill. He sits in the, and you know, he's doing paddle boarding. He doesn't want people to see him and talk to him. He does it only with a few people. I, on the other hand, I don't mind a big stage, but it's important to keep a balance between achieving and being true to yourself and having a balance. And maybe all the skills that I've learned at London Real, all the marketing, all the product creation, all those things, they are just preparation for me to take a humble message that something like John Richards has is talking about, to have a real message like that and to go out and spread it in the world. That's how I'm thinking about it. So I want to be the voice, or I want to at least attempt to be a voice for people who don't have the blessing and the opportunity to meet a mentor like John Richards that I had. Mm. So John Richards, I didn't explain it, but you know, he's my mentor.
Sure. Well, it's an interesting irony, actually, listening to you walk through that, and I'm curious what your viewpoint on this is after everything that you've watched, is to some degree, the people who have a voice that are actually listened to are often driven by these things that are pushing them, and they, for sometimes the wrong reasons, are out there espousing belief systems, etc. And the people who aren't necessarily good at that, because that's not what's been driven in them, but they really have something to contribute, can't get their message out there. You know, that's an interesting dichotomy that I find is almost sad, Scott, to a degree.
Well, let's go into this, Scott. I'm getting chills. I'm getting chills everywhere, because I am so passionate about this, and hopefully I can give an insight here that is uniquely to my situation when I was at London Real. I had the chance to come in contact with a lot of personal brands or people that are big, and I saw how a lot of them behind the scenes, how they were. And, you know, they're like people. Some of them are normal, you know, they're nothing special. Some of them are, you know, not that great people behind the scenes. And some of them are better than expected when you meet them in real life. I'm just going to give a shout out to Ido Portal and Eben Pagan, because those guys were really two guys that just completely blew me away. And what I understood was, what I think, this is my personal opinion, if you want to get to a stage to get invited to a top podcast like London Real, when you get to a podcast like London Real, you're usually one of the best in your industry. So you have to do certain things to get to that level. And what I believe is, you need to have two things. First of all, you need to figure out, you need to know what your talent is. And then second of all, you need to put in hard work. So those are two very simple things. But what I think, what makes somebody go from the top 1% to the 0.1 top percent, is the only difference that I was able to see, that I truly believe, is that the people at the very top push through more pain than the people that are below that. It's the only thing. To me, that's what I saw that I could see. They just pushed through more pain. And they got to such a level that they're usually people that are out of balance, that had to sacrifice other aspects of their life to get to that place. They had to sacrifice relationships, sacrifice family, sacrifice their friends, sacrifice their hobbies to get to that level. And what do? We put it on a pedestal. These people that are almost handicapped in other areas of their life. And now, this is the fun point that I want to talk to you with, that I'm so passionate about. As you might know, most of the Western world is becoming atheist. And so we're kind of dropping religion, because we don't believe in the stories that are being told in these religions, because we take them literally. And obviously, there were the stories from that time. So that was good in that context. I'm talking about when you're in the Greek gods during the Greeks, the Roman gods during the Romans, the Bible, etc. And I'm not saying the Bible and the Quran and all those things don't have any benefits right now. They still have great, they're a great help and support. But in the Western world, most people are atheists. So what happens? Religion has a lot of stories that we believe that a lot of the Western world do not want to believe in, but they also have a lot of spiritual practices that by rejecting religion, we also reject these spiritual practices that are actually beneficial to us. And what happens, we get to a place where we feel empty, where we maybe feel, what is this all worth for? What am I doing? I'm pushing, but I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling fulfilled. I'm feeling empty. So what do? We go and listen to the personal brands. We listen to a Joe Rogan. We listen to a Tim Ferriss. We listen to a London Real. And all these are great channels to listen to and have great advice. And you might have to understand the context here. I'm not saying that this is good or bad or whatever. But what you have to understand is that to get to a level like that, where you have such a reach, you are one of these people that has to sacrifice everything in order to get that level. So now you're taking advice from people that, again, they have a great mission, they have great intention, but it might be you're taking advice from somebody who's on a high level and is pushing only for that reach usually. I mean, not completely. I do have to be a little bit honest here. These are all great people, but that's what we gear towards now. And I believe that.
Well, in a lot of instances, that there was a cost, and many times when they have reached that pinnacle, they're having these self-realization moments of what was it all for, and recognizing that they're still not necessarily fulfilled. Like, I listened to an interesting podcast the other day between Rich Rule, who's one of the more famous podcasters out there, and Blake Mycoskie, who started the Tom's Shoe phenomena. And Blake's done a lot of stuff in his 40 years, and he talks about a moment when he talked to Ted Turner, who built CNN, and Ted told him this story about how life is about climbing a ladder and always looking up, that there's this bag at the top of the ladder, and you're always wondering what's in the bag. And when you finally climb to the top of the ladder, you realize that the bag is empty. And it's kind of, you know, to your point, there's this massive amount of sacrifice, but I think a lot of these people come to that realization that that's not what it was all about, but it takes them getting there and climbing that ladder and getting the empty bag to recognize that that self-fulfilling prophecy in some sense.
Correct, yeah. And in respect, those big brands, I mean, I completely respect them. And it's not about them. It's actually what I'm talking about is about the listener, is that when you have that level and you're trying to search for something, you're trying to learn, that's what we're gearing towards. Yeah, that's what we're taking, that's what we want to take advice from. But we have to watch out and be aware of this quote unquote, maybe hero worship, or trying to give it context into our life. I think, and this is what I'm so excited about when I talk to somebody like John Richards, is the Western world is in a deep need for, dare I use the word, spirituality. Because we've pushed the boundary so hard on achievement, and things have become so noisy, and there's so much media out there. And what we hear is the way to have a great life is the achievement part, is the growing part. And that's a part of it, but it's not the only part. And what I think is about to come is the new story. What I talk about when I'm talking with John Richards, what's the new story? What's the story, you know, during the Bible, that was the story from that time. During the Greeks, that was the story from that time. What's the story from today? We don't have it. There is no story on how to live a balanced life today. There are stories on how to become successful, which is why these personal brands are very useful, because there is a great benefit in climbing the ladder, but it's just not the only part of life. And I think that is what I was missing. And now that I'm talking to you, that's probably the story that I want to promote. What are the stories? How can we be driven? Or not how we can be driven. I mean, how can we be drawn? How can we create a juiceful life, a life with juice, without having to burn out? How can we find out what our gift is? And what I believe is people, they want to be driven because they want to create something meaningful. They want to be fruitful to a certain extent. That's what they really want. They want to create impact. How can you do that in a way that's meaningful? Fulfillment and drive, or fulfillment and being drawn. I think that's the message that I would like to see get out more.
Yeah, well, I think your message around the measuring stick should not be in the quantity, but the quality of the connection and the message and the mechanics of what it is that you create. Like you're saying, you know, if I can move one person, you know, versus this need to move 30,000 followers or something else. Like it's, if you can connect with that inner desire to help, spiritually help one individual, how that cascades has its own phenomenon in its own energy. But if you start with that, then I think your balance is a lot more healthy than if you start with, I need to be impactful. So to be impactful, I have to have followers or people or listeners or whatever it is kind of thing. So, you know, I think.
Yes. And don't get me wrong. When I'm saying I want to impact one person, at least one person, I mean, I'm creating this presentation and I'm getting it out there because obviously I want to impact as many people as possible, but it's not reach that's my first driver. Mm-hmm. The first driver is it creating impact? And then the second driver is reach to impact ratio. If I reach 100 people, do I impact, you know, 10 people or whatever? Am I creating something that is of quality? And then I try to throw a net of reach. Mm-hmm. But I think it's this distinction of making that. Like, I'm not trying to say here, just impact one person, because for a lot of people, that's going to be maybe boring. I understand that. But I think as a high achiever, we gear more towards scale, or it's easier to gear towards scale and wanting to impact rather than, okay, what does this mean? Am I really doing something that's meaningful? Am I doing this for the people? Am I doing this so people can love me? Am I doing this for my father, for my mother? Am I pleasing people? Or am I really doing this because it's coming from me, from my values? Am I creating something that I really believe in, that's aligned with my values? That's my creative side. That's my unique self. Is that what's happening? Mm-hmm. And I want to get that out more because I think we can use more of that.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to finish by saying where can people find your speech on, I think it's the 13th. You're going to post it out and listen to your message.
Yes. So you can find it on YouTube. The title is How to Feel Alive Without Giving Up Drive. And you can just find me under my name, Alexander Tziri. I'm on YouTube and on Facebook, or my website, www.alexanderziri.com.
Beautiful. Thank you for your time today, sir. It's wonderful to listen to your story and get to know you a little bit better and understand your message.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. This was very fun.
Cool. Have a good day.
You too.
Thanks for joining us today on Leave Your Mark. I hope we've left a mark on you today, and we wish only that you pay it forward by sharing this story, taking the time to rate and comment on this podcast. Please follow us at Twitter at Built by Scott and Instagram at King O'Pain, and become a member of this community at Scott G. Livingston on Facebook. Have a great day. Music by Cedric de Saint-Rome.